Hey everybody, welcome to a brand new episode of the SmackDown Summary here on Inside the Ropes. I'm Kenny, joined as always when we talk about SmackDown by Sondra, and we are here to talk about the Go Home episode for Hell in a Cell coming up this coming Sunday. Hi Sondra, how are you?
Hi Kenny, I keep forgetting that Hell in a Cell is on Sunday, and every time I remember, I'm like, oh fuck, there's a pay-per-view on Sunday. But other than that, you know, things are things. It's fine.
I'm all in for this
Life
pay-per-view on Sunday.
Life keeps happening.
I'm so in for this pay-per-view, like... So much fun stuff on this show coming up.
There's actually quite a bit. Like, when I say that, I'm not saying that, like, oh, Hell in a Cell is going to be a slog. Like, I'm actually looking forward to multiple matches. Like, I'll be honest, like, I haven't really been catching up on the Raw stuff very much. But, like, on the SmackDown side, I'm looking forward to pretty much everything that they're putting on, which is great. Like, I mean, even Randy Orton and Jeff Hardy, for some reason, has been intriguing. It's not... Like, it's not necessarily tailor-made for me because it involves Randy Orton and he's not in the sun, but, you know, like, I'm allowed to boo the bad guy.
This pay-per-view does not have a duffer match on it. Like, let's just run through the card quickly. Dolph and Drew against Seth and Ambrose, that would be great.
Charlotte, that should be good.
Charlotte and Becky, Orton and Hardy in a cell, Ronda and Alexa, Roman and Strowman in the cell. New Day and Rusev Day, AJ and Samoa Joe.
Can we talk about the artwork for Roman and Strowman? Like, what even are they doing?
I find it so funny that people have such an issue with it. I'm just like, I've seen so many worse posters. Like,
oh, there are worse posters. Like, I mean, there was like, you know, they usually put people in devil horns. I just don't know why Braun Strowman is like an evil dragon.
I mean, I want to see that show.
Right?
We've got the New Day and Rusev Day, AJ and Samoa Joe, and Brie and Daniel Bryan against The Miz and Maurice. That's the card. 8 matches. Oh, no, sorry. I read here that the New Day and Rusev Day is maybe going to be in the kickoff show, which to me says there's only 7 matches in the main card. That's strange. But the point is...
Is the pay-per-view still 4 hours then?
No idea. I guess we'll find out. And this is just me looking at Wikipedia, so it could be wrong. But I mean, the point is, there's not really a duffer match on that card, so that's good.
No, there's not like the likes of, you know, Finn Balor and Baron Corbin again or something like that. That almost seems like they could have put the Cruiserweight title at least on the pre-show for it instead of having it on 205 Live next week.
It definitely is in the kickoff. Just checking WWE.com here. At the end of the tournament.
What, New Day and Rusev Day is on
New
the
Day and Rusev Day. Yes, Sunday during the Hell in a Cell kickoff, SmackDown Tag Champs New Day will battle Rusev Day. So there you go. It's going to be on the pre-show. So,
I'm kind of bummed that's on the pre-show and not on the main show, but I mean, I'm looking forward to the match and I'm definitely going to want to watch the pre-show in that case.
So let's talk about the show. We get a tribute to 9/11, which is cool. Always good to remember folks who were, you know, involved in that. Not people. Never mind. You know what I meant.
Yep.
The people who were lost on that day. I do not mean the other thing. God, didn't think that was going to go wrong.
It's good to memorialize people who lost their lives in that tragedy.
There she is.
Like, so, Zelina Vega's father, who there was a thing on WWE.com where they interviewed her about that.
Yeah, that sucks. That really sucks. We get Jeff Hardy coming out, though, to start the show. He talks about how on Sunday he's going to confront his most dangerous demon in the form of a serpent, and he's going to confront him in a cell, which is his paradise. And, you know, he goes on, he talks about, you know, Orton may be a demon. He's a daredevil. He's got no fear. He's prepared for this all his life, and he's going to unleash pain and torment on him until he fades away and finds himself obsolete. And Jeff Hardy is really good, and I'm really enjoying him, and this feud with Randy Orton is really fun, and I'm really enjoying it, and I'm very surprised at that.
Yeah, I'm surprised too. I mean, and again, I just keep saying, like, in the year of our Lord 2018, Randy Orton versus Jeff Hardy is managing to be a compelling feud, but it is, and it's, I would quite like to see Randy Orton fade away and classify himself as obsolete. I would be very okay with that. But I think, you know, again, like, is this the feud that I'm most interested in based on the characters? No, but I think they're doing such a good job with the storytelling and Randy Orton just being such an utter prick of humanity that I want to see Jeff Hardy get retribution against him. And Randy Orton saying that he's going to be super sadistic and awful, like, I believe that he could be super sadistic and awful because we've seen him be pretty sadistic and awful lately when he's like trying to rip Jeff Hardy's ear apart or, you know, erase his face or whatever. And I think they're doing good things with it. It's, I mean, the only weird thing is that this is basically just a grudge match, right? Like, there's no title or anything on the line. And Shinsuke Nakamura almost seems to be kind of forgotten in the mix right now, which is strange because he's actually the United States champion, but he's not even on the Hell in a Cell card, whereas Randy Orton versus Jeff Hardy in a grudge match over erasure and obsolescence and whatever is on the card and in a cell because Jeff Hardy wants to jump off one, probably.
Which obviously leads us to Nakamura coming out. It's Nakamura versus Jeff. They have a match that goes quite long, it was about 13 minutes, but of course Randy Orton comes out to interfere, knocks Hardy off, which gives the DQ win for Jeff Hardy. Orton is just, you know, beating the shit out of him. He sets up for an RKO, but then Hardy avoids it, grabs the chair, hits Orton in the back with it, does a twist of fate, then he climbs to the top, does a swanton, and I mean, that's pretty much code for Randy Orton will beat him and he will die on Sunday.
It seems like that is definitely going to happen. But I mean, yeah, Jeff Hardy and Nakamura had a fine match. I thought it was fun enough. It went very long. I think there were two ad break segments. One of them played the match over the commercials and whatnot. One of them didn't. But yeah, again, it's weird that Shinsuke Nakamura is like the least important person in this kind of weird triple threat story that they have going on. But Randy Orton and Jeff Hardy should be able to pull off something decent in the cell, I think.
Then that leads us to The Miz and Maryse being interviewed. Maryse is talking about it's her first singles match in 7 years tonight against Brie Bella. She got back into shape 5 months after giving birth, so she's ready to show Monroe Sky how good she is at punching Brie in the face. Miz says they're the hardest hitting couple in WWE and that Brian and Brie have got a marriage of convenience. Accuses Brian of not holding up his end of the marriage, and Brie has to come back to work to put food on the table, but Maryse would embarrass Brie and prove that they are the it couple on Sunday. How in the human level of fuck does Maryse look the way she does after giving birth to a child? I have seen Sondra get up from drinks, and she looks like she's died. Maryse has had a baby. A baby, Sondra. I've seen you literally crawl on a floor to get water from drinks.
Yes, not that has happened.
Not that I'm comparing you to Maryse in this, but my point stands is that how did she do this, Sondra?
I love that this is basically like, oh, Sondra, you look like shite.
No, this is not. This is to do with any human woman, Maryse, Brie, you. If you have a kid, right? I assume that kind of like wrecks
they
your
do.
Stomach. Now, you have a very flat stomach, Sondra. You know you do. I'm just saying, how do you have a kid and get back to that?
I have no idea. I have no earthly idea because, I mean, like, Maryse had a child very, very recently, like, not long ago at all. She had that child in April and she looks like that. I did not expect Maryse to be, like, bearing her midriff and being like, hey, but I mean, if I looked like that after having a kid, then I would totally bear my midriff too and be like, hey, this is awesome. I mean, it's insane to me. I don't understand. Like, the whole concept of having a child and having a parasite grow in you for 9 months and then, like, expelling it from you in very painful ways, like, none of that appeals to me at all. But more power to these women who have done it. And, I mean, like, say what you will about, you know, Brie Bella versus Maryse in the main event didn't really light anyone's world on fire as this is going to be a great wrestling match, right? But the fact that Maryse is getting in the ring 5 months after having a child, and Brie Bella, you know, had a very difficult delivery with Birdie and had to have a C-section and all that kind of stuff. And, like, you know, that was a year and a half ago or so, I think. Yeah, it's impressive. And it's really super fucking cool that WWE is kind of embracing motherhood and embracing women who've had kids and are coming back and are, you know, like, just absolutely killing it. So I think that's great. And I love Miz and Maryse here. They're excellent. They're always excellent. I think they work so well together, and they're just utter pricks, right?
Utter pricks. Then we get a pre-tape interview from AJ.
And I like that they're highlighting Maryse's accomplishments too. They're like, you know, 2-time Divas champion. She was, I mean, at the time, Maryse was the longest reigning Divas champion until AJ Lee dethroned her. So, you know, it was a very different era. It wasn't necessarily a wrestling heavy era, but I like the fact that they're like, no, Maryse is a wrestler too.
Yes, yeah, it's good that they're showing that side of her. And you know, she was decent by the standards of the day. I would love to see if she really wanted to. But the thing with Maryse is that I think Maryse recognizes that her best role is not trying to be a full-time wrestler. Like
there's nothing wrong with that.
No. Some people, Lana could take notes on that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, she can get in there now and then and mess it up. So we'll see what happens. Anyway, we go to AJ Styles, did a pre-tape. He's in an empty arena, talks about, you know, Samoa Joe knows his weaknesses, his temper, talks about his family, that, you know, he would never go after a man's family because it's about integrity. Joe's strength is talking and intimidating, but all stops on Sunday because once the bell rings, nobody has the advantage over AJ, and it's the place... It is the place that AJ Styles built, and it's not for rent, and it damn sure isn't for sale.
I mean...
Property puns with AJ Styles.
I really want to see a real estate breakdown of the WWE, right? Like, because it's the house that AJ Styles built, but it was Paige's house, but like...
Now, is Undertaker's...
She doesn't live there anymore.
Is Undertaker and Roman's yards there?
Yeah, so like, are there yards adjacent to AJ's house?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of questions. I really need a diagram.
Like, I want someone with more artistic talent than me to draw up a map of WWE house ownership. Because I think that'd be great. Like, I would totally wear that on a t-shirt.
Yeah, that'd be great. But yeah, AJ Styles, not the greatest promo in the world. But, you know, he's trying.
It was fine, though. And honestly, though, I think since this feud with Samoa Joe and since they've kind of gotten his family involved in it and given them something to do instead of just, like, have good wrestling matches, because I think where a lot of the AJ Styles Nakamura stuff fell flat was they were building it around having these great matches and then, like, the matches weren't as good necessarily. And once Nakamura turned heel, it got a little more interesting, but Nakamura was the interesting one. I think they've given AJ more of a purpose in this feud, and they've given him something to be angry about character-wise, and I think that's really helped him, because I don't think this promo was bad or anything.
Is it maybe part of it that, like, the AJ Nakamura stuff maybe didn't work because there wasn't really anybody to carry any promos, whereas Joe's able to carry the stuff here?
Yeah, I think that could definitely be it, because AJ, I think, is at his best when he has someone to bounce off of in terms of, like, promo battles instead of just, like, him having to carry the story solo, you know what I mean? And I think, you know, Joe is definitely more compelling as a promo on this episode and every episode ever because he is the best. But I think AJ did well here, and the whole empty arena thing I don't really get. Like, I've never understood that. Like, why do you cut promos to an empty arena?
I think the idea is that, you know, if he was in the arena, the tempers would fly so much that he would end up having to beat him up.
Oh.
So it's an empty arena to sort of, like, keep them apart.
Oh, is that why they do this? Like, I've always wondered.
Yeah.
So, because I've never understood it. I've always just been like, well, why don't you just cut the promo? Like, does it lend more gravitas than if you just cut the promo backstage or something? But I guess if you're comparing it to him cutting it in the empty arena versus coming out live, I guess I get that, because maybe he doesn't want to get beaten up. Is it like, hey, I showed up really early for work, look how great I am? Because I understand why Miz and Maryse did it last week, because it was to goad Brie and Brian, right? And to say, like, oh, we showed up earlier than you and you're not here, so you're cowards. When, I mean, it was ridiculous for them to call Brie and Brian out in an empty arena when it wasn't being televised or broadcast. Like, how would they know to go there, right? And that was Miz and Maryse being pricks. But... like, because didn't John Cena cut an empty arena promo about The Rock or something that was terrible?
I think so. I mean, there's been a lot of empty arena promos over the years. Some of them work really well. Some of them don't. It's just kind of... It all depends on... I think the problem was that the AJ promo was fine, and then later in the show, it was just completely blown up by somebody else.
Yeah. Because I think I get it more when it's like, I'm here and I'm in the arena and I'm here early because I have to, like, get in this mind frame of facing you and that kind of stuff. Like, that kind of thing works for me, but I'm just kind of sitting here and nobody's here yet. I've never really understood, but I think AJ handled himself fine here.
So up next, we have we get shown footage from Becky and Charlotte next week. Charlotte's been interviewed, asked why she asked for a match with Sonya Deville. She said, because unlike Becky, she's a fighting champion, wants to prove every night that she's the best, and hopes that Becky's watching so she can see what a real champion looks like. That takes...
I don't get that, because, like, Becky is a fighting champion or a fighting person. Like, the reason she got all of the momentum to be able to face Carmella is because she kept winning matches and was on a winning streak and had momentum behind her. So Charlotte's kind of full of shit here, right?
Yes, she is. And I have a theory.
Just saying.
Once we talk about this match, I have a theory what could happen. and I think it's plausible. Okay. Anyway, Sonya Deville versus Charlotte. I actually thought Sonya Deville did pretty decent here. I don't think it was great, but I think that she did some decent stuff. And it was a, I mean, there was a pretty awkward looking kind of modified powerbomb thing. But for the most part, I feel like Sonya looked like she could hang, which is good. I'm trying to be positive here, Sandra.
I appreciate that because you know that I'm a big Sonya Deville fan. I think she did quite well here. Again, I think that she looks newer at this. I think that, you know, she doesn't have the luxury of traveling the world and facing tons and tons of different opponents, right? And I think that's one of the reasons maybe that people who are trained specifically in the WWE Performance Center don't advance as quickly as someone who, you know, spends 5 years on the indies or whatever, because they wrestle the same opponents regularly, and there's not as much variety, and there's not as much variety in styles, and it's not, you know, as much a variety in crowds and whatnot, right? Like, you're wrestling in front of the same crowds all the time. So, but I think that Sonya's really kind of putting it together, and I think the more matches that she has with people like Charlotte and like Becky, who are really, really good at this, the better she's going to get. And I like seeing her progression, and I like, I mean, she has a different style to a lot of the women, right? Like, she has that whole, like, I'm an MMA fighter, but she's not as much of a killer as like Ronda Rousey or Shayna Baszler, but I like the fact that she has a different style to her, and I think she's putting it together well. And I like that Mandy Rose is still with her. I like that they're still pals. I was obviously looking forward to this match quite a bit because I'm a big Sonya Deville fan, and I enjoyed it.
Post-match, Charlotte is celebrating, and as she's taking a picture with some kids in the front row, she got leveled by this dark-haired vixen who turned out to be Becky Lynch in disguise. Becky jumps the guardrail, hits kick to the ribs, hits the disarmer before walking to the back. A little bit of a heelish tendency here, but I think some of it, I mean, this is stuff that Austin was doing in the 90s when he was a babyface, so I don't think there's really much to read into it. But I have a theory, Sandra.
And okay.
Hear me out. I think that we will see on Sunday at Hell in a Cell some sort of disputed finish between Charlotte and Becky. I think that's what's going to happen. I think that will lead us to Evolution, where I think Becky will defeat Charlotte Flair to become the SmackDown Live Women's Champion. Do you know why I think that? Why I think that this is a theory that could be realistic and I can back it up?
Why?
What is the next pay-per-view after Evolution? In November.
I don't know.
November. The Survivor Series.
Oh, that one.
Where
okay.
Brands face brands. Champion versus champion. They are not going to want to do Ronda versus
Charlotte.
They're
not going to want to do Charlotte versus Ronda.
Which means we could get Ronda versus Becky.
That would be amazing. I would be super into that.
And I don't think it's a long stretch that it could happen. So, I'm kind of intrigued to see what they do. But that's what I think could be a potential realistic situation.
I mean, I like your thinking there. I definitely do. And I think that, you know, that, I don't know, there's validity there. I definitely think there is. I would love to see Becky win the title on Sunday. I think if she doesn't win it on Sunday, she definitely needs to win it at Evolution because she still has all the momentum in the world behind her. This did feel a little bit like a step back in terms of, like, Becky was very heelish here. I love her in a clever disguise. It actually reminded me, do you remember when Sami Zayn asked Becky Lynch to be his mixed match challenge partner and he wore a clever disguise in the crowd and pretended to be a fan and then asked her to be his partner? I just feel like Becky and Sami have conspired a little bit and like, you know, like she's just carrying on the tradition of clever disguises, which was amazing. And I don't know. I just adore it. And my headcanon is that they're still like best friends. But I'm not going to not like Becky in a clever disguise, but she was definitely like beating up Charlotte and in a very heelish way, like kind of just beating her up after a match where Charlotte hadn't really done anything to her at that point. But I get that she's still pissed about everything and she wants to obviously beat the shit out of her before Hell in a Cell. So it makes sense. I guess I wish that Becky hadn't been so heelish because I think the past couple weeks they've done a really good job of walking that line of having neither one of them really be babyface and neither one of them really be heel. It's just two people who you want to see fight. And on this episode, it seemed very much like they presented Charlotte with a clear babyface promo where she didn't have as much of an edge to her as she did last week when she was talking about Becky. And then Becky was like very heelish by attacking Charlotte out of the crowd. But you know, I still enjoyed the segment. It didn't make me any more excited for Hell in a Cell. Like, I'm ready to see the match for sure.
Yeah, it's going to be cool to see what happens. Becky's approached backstage, but she said she saved the interview for after she takes back her title. So, you know, great as always. We see New Day at ringside at the announce booth as they're going to watch the finals to see who goes on to face them at Hell in a Cell. It is Rusev Day versus The Bar. They have a pretty fun match, which ends up going about 11 minutes. And in the end, Sheamus is going for the brogue kick on Rusev, but Aiden English shoves Rusev out the way so he can take the kick himself. That allows Rusev the chance to hit the Mashka kick for the 1-2-3 Rusev Day go on to the Hell in a Cell kickoff show to face off against the New Day. You must have been over the moon that friendship prevailed and they became the number one contenders.
Friendship prevailed. Aiden sacrificed himself for the good of Rusev Day and it worked. And I think like there were so many times that Aiden tried to sacrifice himself and it backfired for Rusev Day that I still get nervous. Like I get physically nervous and like I put my hands up to my mouth and I'm like, no, just let it work. And so now when he's helping out Rusev and he's, you know, sacrificing himself in this match because he wasn't the legal man, so he takes the bro kick and then Rusev, you know, wins and everything is grand and Aiden is singing them to the ring again and Lana is ringside being supportive and she is happy that they are all friends and there's just nothing lovelier than that. I love friendship. I love when friendship in wrestling prevails. I love when friendship in wrestling is celebrated and not made to, you know, make people look like fools. This just makes me very, very happy. I love The Bar. Absolutely love The Bar. Cesaro is one of my very favorite wrestlers, but it is Rusev Day's time, and yay, friendship. Like, I want Rusev Day to win the world because they're great, and they're, you know, it's one of those things where they're actually able to capitalize on popularity. Like, for a while, it seemed like they were trying to kill Rusev Day because it got too popular and people liked it too much, and that just seems to be this thing that they do sometimes for some reason that I don't really understand and I never will. But right now, they're giving me what I want in terms of Rusev Day. And it's going to be Battle of the Days, Kenny. The Days are going to be fighting at
Battle of the Days at the pay-per-view. Yeah, it's good to see. I'm curious as to whether I don't think they're going to win the titles necessarily in the kickoff show, but I'm curious to see if this is the beginning of like a longer program with those two or whether somebody interferes and Rusev Day kind of going to do something else. Or I'm curious.
I'm curious too. And I'd be okay with a longer program. I mean, I would love to see Rusev Day as tag team champions. I think that'd be great. New Day are kind of, they're the established, the tried and true, the, you know, you put the titles on New Day when you need to put the titles on New Day because they obviously they can always carry it. They can always have great matches. But I would kind of like something new and different. And Rusev Day would definitely be new and different because they haven't been an established tag team that long. So I don't know. I don't think the outcome is entirely predictable. I think New Day's probably going to win, but I think that they could throw us a swerve and it wouldn't just feel like it came out of nowhere. It wouldn't be like a B-team situation.
Oh, God. Elite mail. Yeah. New Day and Rusev, they're kind of, you know, staring off at each other.
Another thing that surprised me, actually, I really expected The Bar to win because this is going to be a babyface versus babyface match at Hell in a Cell. Because
yeah,
Rusev Day are firmly entrenched in the babyface camp now, which is good because they need to be because they are popular and we love them.
I do want to bring up something. Carl Pierce had mentioned this in the Facebook community and I couldn't really be bothered in like 25 words to try and respond to it, but he'd kind of said that he's not very happy about how Carmella's all of a sudden the babyface and she's with R-Truth and there's no explanation, and he'd made some comparisons to the Mickie James turn of last year. So this is just for me, this is why I'm okay with it. I don't think Carmella necessarily needed to turn. I think that the R-Truth thing had been a storyline for a couple of months where there was various things and it led to this natural point. And I think her babyface turn was her coming out to be with him in his match with The Miz. I think that was the turn. And I think that the way that the program is and the way that their partnership is and where it's placed in the show, that was enough. I don't think you needed to do much more than that. And I think that people got it and people picked up on it and it made sense. And it's a very clear, Carmella showed up at this point. So she, I guess now she's with R-Truth and she's made that decision to change course or to become a babyface or whatever it is. So I was fine with it. So I'm curious to ask your opinion, Sandra. Do you feel like Carmella needed to do something more, something bigger to make the impact that she's now with R-Truth, or were you, like me, happy with the way they did it?
I'm happy with the way they did it, and the reason it works better for me than and I think the Mickie James thing is a good example to bring up, but with Mickie James, it was just kind of like, she and Alexa were fighting, right? Like, she and Alexa had been fighting, and Alexa called her old, and Mickey called Alexa biscuit butt for some reason that we still don't really understand. And they'd been feuding and said all these horrible things about each other, and then all of a sudden they were just pals. Like, Mickey James just started coming out with her again, and there was no reason for it. I think the difference with the Carmela Archer thing is that there was a building story, and that there is a reason for Carmela to be with R-Truth, because, you know, they've had kind of this relationship going on, not like a romantic relationship, but an actual male-female friendship that's not based on fucking, which is kind of nice. I like that WWE is able to do those types of stories, and the Mixed Match Challenge has given us a lot of that, which is cool. But the whole, like, R-Truth wanting to pin Carmela to get a title shot was a great story backstage. It was our favorite part of SmackDown for a while. And I think what wouldn't work for me as if all of a sudden Carmella was aligned with Charlotte, or Carmella was aligned with Becky or something like that. Like, that would make no sense unless there was some sort of storyline explanation. But Carmella being aligned with R-Truth does make sense in storyline, because, you know, like, R-Truth was like, oh, I want to pin you. And so we've kind of become friends because I've kind of been stalking you weirdly because I want to pin you to get a United States title shot. And, you know, it worked when R-Truth was like, I want you in my corner to face the other Carmella, because, you know, R-Truth wanted some support, so he went to the woman that he's been talking to pretty regularly. I don't know. It seems like a natural storyline progression to me. I don't think that her babyface turn is necessarily, like, a change of character. I don't think that she's, like, a great person now. I don't think that she's, like, this paragon of virtue. I think that if, you know, if push came to shove and she got a chance to get her title back, she would still do dastardly, dastardly things. But I think for the position that she's in right now with R-Truth, it makes sense that she's kind of on the hero side, just because she and R-Truth are pals. So it works for me because there was progression and there was logic to it. It's not like Mickey James just sort of showing up one day for no reason. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make, because it's more of a direct thing with, like, because, like, in the women's division, you're all, like, they've all been intricately a part of each other's lives, really. Whereas mm-hmm. her and R-Truth, like, it's a different thing. It's kind of like the idea of, never mind. Retro Raw means I can't use examples. Never mind. It can happen, and it can work, and it works fine, so.
Yeah, I think it's a completely different story situation, so. You know, I mean, like, there are times, too, where people are kind of heels in one story and baby faces in another story, and that can work. So,
yeah, anyway, from there, we get R-Truth against Andrade Cien Almas. Excuse me, sorry. R-Truth puts a valiant effort in. Zelina Vega tries to get involved, and Carmella intercepts her, but that, of course, distracts R-Truth because he is distracted by anything. And Andrade Cien Almas gets the win. So, the thing that's good about R-Truth is, like, it does not matter if R-Truth never wins a match in his life.
Nope.
As a character, he doesn't need to. And him and Carmella are a ton of fun, and I commend Carmella. Some wrestlers tend to just, like, fall apart when they lose a title, or, you know, they just kind of, like, don't put 100% in. I feel like Carmella really is putting a lot of effort in here to make this partnership work, and I think you can see it in the way that it kind of presents itself. I think she's done a really good job.
Yeah, I think she is doing a really good job, and I think that her partnership with R-Truth can only be good for her, too. Like, in terms of if she wants to maybe have more matches or get, you know, because, I mean, the criticism of Carmella hasn't been that she isn't a good character. The criticism of Carmella has been that she isn't great in ring. And so I think if she can, you know, be in kind of a partnership where maybe she can do some mixed tags, or that, I mean, she's going to be, right? She's in the Mixed Match Challenge. And she can work with some people without having the pressure of being the champion while you're learning to get better. Then I think that can only benefit her. And I don't know. I love them as a pair. I think they're great. They're fun. They're entertaining. They're kind of everything I want. And I, you know, I like that Andrade and Zelina can kind of incite some more of these sort of couple dynamics. Because, I mean, again, it's not like all of the couples, quote unquote, in the Mixed Match Challenge have to be romantically linked. And they're not. And I like that R-Truth and Carmella can just be pals, but they can still be aligned and go after dastardly Andrade and Zelina. Like, because if you're facing Andrade Cien Almas, like, you're going to want to have someone in your corner because you know that Zelina Vega is just waiting to fuck with you. And so I like that it kind of evens the odds there.
Yeah, I'm in. I'm enjoying the storyline, and I, you know, bring on.
And
the
how
next
is R-Truth
tag.
That good at wrestling still?
Who the fuck? How anyway? 46
how does
years
look
old.
The way he does.
I feel like him and Maurice just like have a plan. None of the world knows about it. But just go, here's how we stay in shape. Okay, up next is the segment that is. Dividing opinions. Some people think it's funny. Some people think it's terrible. I'm going to ask you what you think, Sandra. Asuka is backstage. She's asked why she came to Naomi's defense. Naomi walks up and says, you know, she has to know why. Asuka said the Iconics are mean and she can't understand their accents. They're too posh. Naomi says that she likes Asuka's attitude and she feels the glow. Asuka starts to leave because she thought she said go. Naomi brings her back and they agreed to go and eat teriyaki together. So what do you make of the segment? I'm curious to see because I feel like sometimes these kind of segments can either be the ones that you like really love and will defend or ones that you really hate. So I'm curious to see where you sit on it.
I really hate this because it's Asuka. I don't like seeing Asuka reduced to a comedy character making language puns. I think that the content of the segment isn't necessarily terrible for anyone. Like, I mean, it's kind of similar to when Shinsuke Nakamura was like, I don't speak English, but he did that as kind of a prick move because we know that he does speak English. He was just being a dick to Renee when he said it, right? But I don't know, like Asuka being reduced to this, like just in a backstage segment, not understanding the Iconics accents and just like going and being pals with Naomi, like, I guess if you just accept the fact that Asuka is just another lady on the roster and she's never going to be a killer and she's never going to be a player again, then it's fine because, you know, she's now apparently in an alliance with Naomi and that's cool and they can go and be pals in the undercard together. But it's a big old bummer for me to see Asuka kind of just reduced to that. And it felt like, you know, like hailing back to the days of Kai and Tai. And like, I mean, I haven't seen yet with the whole like Funaki Indeed thing or whatever, but I know it's coming. And I don't know. It bummed me out more than anything. It made me kind of upset. I was not a big fan of this. What did you think?
Yeah, I hated it. Okay. Absolutely hated it. The reason I hate it more, I don't even hate the language thing. I actually thought that Asuka leaving and the go thing was quite funny. My bigger problem here is that this, what does it lead to? What are the possibilities of what this leads to? And the idea that where we go with this is Asuka versus Iconics is fucking 2 years ago or whatever it was. And it wasn't great then and it's not going to be great now. It was fine, but I don't want to see fine with Asuka. I want to see something great. And I feel like she's put in this position where it's just, you know, they've decided what they've decided. Now, if they're going to turn her heel on Naomi and then she's going to start to be a little bit of a killer again, great. Maybe that's how we get there. Maybe this is what this is. And if that is it, I will look back and change my mind. But I don't trust that that's what it is. And I just
It doesn't
think,
feel like that's what this is. This feels like it's just Asuka and Naomi don't have anything else to do, so let's have them be pals.
Funny foreigners.
Yeah.
I also just thought, you know, I am away for a weekend with a log cabin with some friends and they're playing games very loudly outside the room. So if you hear them, it is not people dying, it is people playing Sonic on a big TV. So, but funnily enough, them playing Sonic on a TV is better than watching Asuka be destroyed like this. So
yeah, it bums me out.
For me, it's just, we're leading to Asuka and Naomi against the Iconics. Who gives a fuck?
I mean, like, I'm glad that she's doing something and not just forgotten to the ether of time, but it just, I don't know, like it seems like the better way to handle Asuka right now would be to maybe have her face some jobbers, maybe, you know, put her in a program with someone else, maybe. I want to build her back up, and segments like this don't build her back up as a killer. They just firmly entrench her into the mire of everyone else and make her just another lady. And she can play babyface really well. She can play adorable babyface really well. She's one of the most adorable women in the world, but she's also one of the most terrifying women in the world when they let her be. And I think that you can strike a balance there. I think, you know, I keep referencing Smash Challenge because it's coming up and they've been really promoting it. But if you watch her stuff with Miz last year, she played adorable babyface really, really well. She still had her streak intact, which helped. But, you know, Miz was like, I'm going to win this for us. And, you know, I'm going to keep my streak intact. And she's like, my streak. it's my streak. And she managed to kind of play that line between being adorable and funny and cute, but still being like, no, I will kill you and I'm going to win because I'm Asuka and I win and that's what I do. And I don't know, like if Asuka were still in a position of prominence and I felt like they were still handling her well and promoting her well as a star, then a segment like this wouldn't bother me nearly as much because she would still have that allure. But because she doesn't have that allure right now and really kind of needs to be rebuilt, this is unhelpful.
Anyway, so main event time here on SmackDown is Brie Bella against Maryse. This was a thing that people were not looking forward to because they were, you know, after what happened. Now, did you see Brie Bella's interview that she's done?
No.
She did an interview, and let me see if I can find exactly what she said. She was asked about the missing spots thing, and here is what she said. With any type of physical body change, it changes so much.
Did your microphone switch?
Did it? Oh, it has. Here's a tip, ladies and gentlemen. When you buy a new MacBook through USB, and then you buy the connector, which means you can put your USB into it, if you move one fucking centimeter, then you are unable to speak and you have to start again. So I'm just changing my microphone here.
Can you not just like duct tape the thing?
You can't. Now, you guys can hear me fine. It's just Sandra. So Sandra, I sound like I'm in a tin can. But anyway, here is what it was one more time. And now I get to edit two files. Yay. Fuck you, Apple. Although I will take you over any laptop because...
I was going to say, every single time that you give me the whole Apple versus not Apple debate, I'm just going to point to your fucking USB connector that's a constant bane of both of our existences and say no.
Well,
no,
I was going to ask you this. Could I now get a connector that goes from my microphone and the other side, instead of it being USB, could be micro USB?
Probably.
Then I'll get one of them. Anyway, here's what Brie Bella
I mean,
had
I don't
to,
know.
Here's what Brie Bella had to say. With any type of physical body change, it changes so much. Even last week on Raw when I did the suicide dive and it was less momentum than I should have had, I forgot that I'm 10 pounds heavier than what I was. Gravity doesn't lie. That was a little different for me. I don't mind if I fail or if I succeed. No matter what, I want to look back with no regrets. If I fail, last week, for example, I went to sleep that night and I was kind of bummed out, but I learned something about myself. I learned where my body is at and where I'm at. And I thought that was a really excellent answer.
I think that's a great answer. And I think that, you know, people gave her a lot of shit for it. And I think it doesn't help that people really love to give the Bella shit at any opportunity. And I mean, yeah, that, you know, the botched dive and everything on Raw was terrible. But I think that is a great answer. And I think that, you know, sometimes shit happens. And I don't know. I think it's nice that she's willing to be like, nope, that was terrible. I was bummed. I'm going to learn from it and go forward. And I guess I can only respect that.
So with that in mind, we came into Brie Bella versus Maryse. Now, before we talk about all the stuff that happened, talk to me a little bit about the match itself, the two of them. What did you make of what they did do in the ring when they were in there?
I think what they did in the ring was, I mean, they didn't do a lot in the ring, right? Like a lot of it was based on shenanigans. Maryse kind of like powdering out, getting, you know, behind Miz or whatever, having the guys involved with it. And I think that was the smart way to go, because especially like Maryse isn't going to want to take tons of bumps at this point, right? Because again, she just had a baby 5 months ago. Like her body is not going to be in condition to like really go full force and be training and everything to have like this great match. And Brie Bella is not the best wrestler in the world. And I'm sure she's aware of that. Like she seems like someone who wants to try really hard, but she's not. I don't think she's as in love with wrestling itself as like Nikki, because Brie is more about like, you know, and again, this comes from watching Total Bellas and like following them on YouTube and all that kind of stuff. I like the Bellas, but Brie is about her family and she's about, you know, her businesses and her husband and her baby and all that kind of stuff. So like wrestling is not her number one priority love, and that's fine. Like it doesn't have to be. So I think that they did a really smart thing when they didn't have the women try to wrestle too much, but I think what they did was perfectly adequate. I don't think it was like amazing, but I think, you know, like some of the transitions and stuff, you can tell Brie Bella has been working with Brian to try and like work through moves and stuff, and this felt like they practiced it. And I can't really remember like specifics of what they did, but I thought it was fine.
I think they made the right call, which was, you know, having the guys be involved. I actually thought the main event was a ton of fun.
Yeah, it was.
I thought it was booked really well. I continue to argue that I think that this Brian and Miz program is the best program in WWE right now, and I don't say that as if like everything else is rubbish, but I think the involvement of the women has been excellent. Really, really good. The big part of this, obviously, is, you know, Miz getting on the mic and saying that, you know, they were cowards, and then they're going to go and leave. He's cancelling the match. Brie then grabs Maryse by the hair and brings her back. And then Brie gets the
It took too long for me for Brie Bella to go after Maryse. I wanted her to get angry sooner, but I'm sure she was kind of like waiting for her cue. But I don't know. She still got her in before the count of 10, so that was fine.
Yeah, it worked for me. But then, so anyway, there was a yes lock by Brie Bella, and then Miz pulls Brie out of the ring, and Brian goes mental, putting his hands on his wife. He beats him down. He gets in the ring. Miz then tosses Brian out, and he falls into Brie. And as he's checking on her, Miz attacks, Maryse attacks, but Brie turns the tables. Brian recovers, and Brie and Brian end up sort of on top on the way on the end of the show, because Brie ends up blasting Miz. Brian clotheslines over the top, and Brie and Brian can celebrate. I really thought this was a strong main event, and I think that it also, if you were kind of in the mindset or the camp where you're going, well, why would Daniel Bryan be that annoyed at the Miz? He just put his hands on his wife. You know, there's that personal element now, which I think really adds to it. So I was a big fan of this.
Yeah, I was a big fan of it too. I like the fact that they had Miz pull Brie off of Maryse, because that's what he should do, right? Like, he should be helping his wife in that regard. He should be helping her. And like, Brie Bella is a wrestler. The force with which Miz like pulled Brie out of the ring, I think, surprised some people, because you don't normally see men attacking women like that. It's usually allowed for women to like go after men and beat them up, but you don't usually see men putting their hands on women, and I was so glad to see it because it makes perfect sense. The thing that did kind of bug me a little bit is when Brian bumped into Brie, I did gasp for it, because anytime a tag team partner hits their other tag team partner and there's, you know, miscommunication or whatever, I'm always like, oh no, like, you hit your partner and now they're down. But they treated it like Brie Bella was just dead on the ground from being bumped into by Brian, like she was a referee or something. And I was like, I mean, she is a wrestler. She has fallen down before. I think she's going to be okay. And she did rally and she came back. Like, it was just kind of a minor annoyance where it was like, oh no, a man ran into a woman and now she is dead. They treated it like when Big Show ran over AJ Lee. Like, I don't think that the force of Brian coming off the apron was quite that intense. But thankfully, like, Brie did kind of rally and they got to stand tall and all that kind of stuff. And I don't know. I liked the shenanigans here. I think they'd made the smart move of making it more of an angle and making it more shenanigans heavy instead of just trying to let the women have a straight wrestling match. Because it built a lot more for the mixed tag than just seeing, you know, Brie beat Maryse or Maryse cheat to beat Brie or something like that. I don't know. This was a lot of fun, and I'm really looking forward to the mixed tag on Sunday.
Yeah, and SmackDown again, big thumbs up for me. The one thing I missed to talk about, how the fuck could I have missed this, but I did, was, of course, the Samoa Joe children's story.
Yeah!
How did we miss that? This is...
I have no idea.
But, of course, the best segment of the show. Creepy music in the background. He tells a nighttime story to AJ Styles. Talking about, you know, AJ's got a big head, forgets about his family, Joe's the hero, AJ's living in a house of lies, there's a despair of the family, and the reasonable solution of him becoming their new dad. And the last picture has a photo of Wendy and Annie looking on at Samoa Joe with the WWE Championship. This was fucking great.
This was amazing. Did you see Samoa Joe's tweet that he should get a Caldecott?
He's the best of us.
A Newbery would make a lot more sense, because Caldecott's like for illustration and Newbery is for best overall children's book, but like, I understand his point, and he is the best of us, and this was incredible. Like, I think David said Val even watched SmackDown, David wasn't watching it, and she was like, okay, nothing's really worth checking out, but you have to see Samoa Joe's bedtime story to AJ Styles. Everybody's talking about it because it was fucking great, and it's the kind of thing that should come off as so cheesy, right? Like, it should be the cheesiest thing in the world and it shouldn't work, but he's Samoa Joe and he's just made of magic, and so he can turn the worst story or the most cheesy story or the most cheesy concept into something truly horrifying. There's something actually horrifying about a man reading a bedtime story to a child about how he's going to replace her father. Like, that's really dark shit. And I loved it. And I loved the illustrations on the screen. I think it was really well produced. I don't know. The whole thing was excellent.
And it's a big old thumbs up episode for me.
Yeah, same. Can't agree more. I think it advanced stuff. It made me look forward to Hell in a Cell. Things are actually pretty good right now. SmackDown's on kind of a roll, and I am not complaining.
So there you go. We're going to play Samoa Joe's music to play us out this week. You can get Sandra on social media at Sandra with RW, KennyMC1985. Go to Patreon, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes, where we will be doing a Hell in a Cell review, myself, David, and Sandra, on Monday, where you can check us out, talk about the show, see what we think, and where things are leading into Super Showdown and Evolution and all that good stuff. So, Sandra, thank you for joining me as always.
Of course. Always a pleasure to talk about SmackDown. I mean, when it's good, sometimes it's kind of a chore, but it's been good lately, so it's been a pleasure.
Thank you. So have a great weekend, everybody. We hope you enjoyed the pay-per-view, and we will talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye.